Hello, my friends. Dr. Ken Berry back with you today. I have an excellent guest who I'm quite sure I've had on once before on this channel. She is back again for round two, and that should tell you something about what I believe the caliber of her information is if I invited her back for a second time, because very often that second invite gets lost in the email. I have with me today Michelle Hearn, a registered dietitian and previous sufferer of anorexia. She's written a book called The Dietitian's Dilemma. We recently were hanging out together at Low Carb Boca Raton, and we were talking about eating disorders, anorexia, bulimia, and the other few very, very rare ones, and how the incidence had changed after the food guidelines went into place. And I've got a theory about that, and I wanted to pick her brain since she's not only a registered dietitian, but she suffered from an eating disorder for years. And she's going to tell you her story, and we're going to pick the meat off these bones and see what we can figure out. Let me bring her up. Michelle Hearn, welcome.
Hey, Dr. Berry, thank you so much for having me back on.
It's a pleasure. I enjoy chatting with you both on YouTube Lives and at conferences now. It's official. We've actually met in person. And wonderful in person as you are virtually. So before we get started, tell people a little bit about yourself, not only your history with an eating disorder, but your current qualifications to speak about such things.
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, you know, I was diagnosed with anorexia when I was 12. And when I was 12 years old, I was about 5 feet tall and I weighed 57 and a half pounds. And so I went through inpatient treatment. I was put in an inpatient treatment for 60 days. I was fed the standard American diet. At that time, I was consuming probably 200 to 500 calories a day as a 12-year-old. And I was put on a 3,000 calorie diet and a 24-hour tube feeding system. So I was fed, 2,000 calories via tube and 3,000 calories eating. And, I did gain weight. But I was told, that, hey, since you have anorexia, you're going to suffer with this your whole life. You're probably always going to have anxiety. You're always going to have racing thoughts around food. You may always have issues with your GI, like, constipation, diarrhea, and that's just your lot in life. And so I just thought like, hey, you know what? Even at the age of 12, I remember thinking like, oh my God, I'm going to have to become a just really high functioning person with an eating disorder, recovering from an eating disorder. And that's how I lived. I suffered with anxiety throughout my adolescence and early adulthood. I went through periods where, I'd lose some weight, I'd struggle. I became an athlete, but I knew nutrition was powerful. So you can hear my puppy chewing on his bone. Let me know if that's too loud. I thought if I became a dietitian, I wanted to understand what is going on in my body, And I also wanted to understand, is this my forever reality? Do I really have to suffer? Because I was told that I would always be in recovery, that I would never get any better. And so, if you've listened to my story on other podcasts, just kind of fast forwarding, I became a marathon runner and I really wanted to qualify for the Olympic trials in the marathon. And it wasn't until 2019 that I lost my own health that I made a really big change in how I ate.
Yeah. And you said you were diagnosed at age 12. But looking back now, when did you see it first starting to happen? What age were you, do you think, when it really kind of began?
Very right around there. We know some people it can start as young as, in their 6 to 8. But I remember probably, I remember the first time actually, and not that you mentioned, I went on a diet. I was 5. I was very, very young. Food was quite, it was a focus in my household. Weight was quite the focus in my household. I said on other podcasts, I have a very good relationship with both my parents, but my mom suffered with bipolar disorder and she also suffered with eating disorder tendencies. So from a very young person, I was being conditioned that being fat or being overweight meant you were unlovable, So yeah. I remember internalizing that, I cannot be fat. I cannot be overweight. And I never was as a child, but
as a very young child, that was something you were worried about.
I was very worried about, yeah, you cannot be fat.
Yeah, got it. And well, I was looking at the literature, kind of getting up to speed before I talked to you. And both for anorexia and bulimia, there looks like in the twin studies that there is a tiny genetic predisposition, maybe 1 or 2%, but that's by no means You know, that's not the root cause or the major cause. And I think Michelle and I have figured out what the root cause or the majority cause, the biggest cause.
Yeah.
And we're gonna get to that. When you went to, you're a registered dietitian now, and during your training, I'm sure that you paid careful attention to anything that had anything to do with an eating disorder, anorexia in particular. What did you see as far as the training goes that seemed to make good sense or didn't make any damn sense? And looking back now, like, what training are you just look back like, that's ridiculous, that's not going to help anybody, versus maybe something you were taught that was useful?
Yeah. So, you know, the main thing, like, when I, to become a dietitian, you get your 4-year degree and then you go through an internship. And when I first went through the internship, I will never forget a few things that really didn't make sense. And before, and I'll get to eating disorders, but the first thing, we went to a patient who was severely diabetic, type 2 diabetes, very obese. And the dietitian was telling me, like, we're going to give them 75 grams of carbohydrates per meal and 15 per snack. And I was like, oh, wait, they can't process carbs. Why are we giving them carbs? And, oh, well, everybody needs carbs. We need whole grains. It's good for you. And I would ask, I just ask questions like, hey, this doesn't make sense. And I was kind of pegged like, this is Michelle's, this difficult dietetic student. And then we went to the ICU. And in the ICU, I remember flipping over the 2 feeding ingredients. And I was like, oh my God, this is the same stuff I was fed as a 12-year-old. At that point, I was 25. So 13 years later, and Dr. Berry, even now, I'm 38. So 25 years later, the number one ingredients for 2 feeding, you guys, and this is all 2 feedings, all standard 2 feedings, maltodextrin, corn syrup solids, soy protein, and canola oil. So if your loved one is in a major car accident, if you're, you know, a lot of cancer patients, if you're anorexic, you're getting this, you know, that nutrition, and a quote unquote nutrition, you're getting calories. So I simply asked, I said, hey, you know, our patient had been in a major accident. I said, is this okay to be feeding someone who's inflamed? Oh, it's all about calories, Michelle. It's all about protein and calories. Quality wasn't a concern. And then
I think that's still the standard in any tube feeding is sugar, sugar, vegetable oil. That's the first 4 ingredients.
Yeah. And people will come back and say, hey, Michelle, there's better tube feedings now. Absolutely. There are. And I practiced Dr. Berry for 11 years and only once were we able to get it covered by insurance. And that was someone who had literally had 38 surgeries. So if you can't get it covered by insurance, so that's 99.9% of the population, and you want a better tube feeding formula, you're looking at about, you know, $1,000 to $1,500 a day just for the tube feeding.
Yeah.
So
I had a patient in the nursing home who had a G-tube. And I looked at the ingredients. I'm like, God, this is crap. And so I talked to the DON. I'm like, hey, can we not get a better? And all the administration just laughed. They're like, no, they're lucky to get that and us not, you know, melt some ice cream and pour down the tube, because there's no way that the insurance or our company is going to pay for those tube feedings.
Yeah. And when you're in eating disorder treatment, you are required to eat every single thing, like saying like, hey, this doesn't make me feel good. Like, you're required to eat, like, you know, and they're all the same. It's the standard American diet. So you're getting like lean, you know, you're getting chicken, you're getting bread with margarine, you're getting cookies. If you say my stomach hurts. I was 12. I was put on 7 different medication because of my stomach hurt, I had anxiety, I had diarrhea. And I was just told, like, you know, it's in your head, it will pass. I mean, you are considered a non-compliant patient if you do not want to eat everything. And if you say your stomach hurts, they're like, oh, you're just eating disordered. Oh, you're just trying not to eat. Where, I mean, anybody watching this who's suffered with anorexia or bulimia, if your stomach hurts, I hear you. I believe you. We have people who, Dr. Berry, who starve themselves. Your GI is damaged. I think this is one of the reasons we see such a high relapse rate in anorexia. It's 50%. 50% of people with anorexia will relapse. And the numbers for bulimia and binge eating disorder aren't far behind that. You know?
And that's something you taught me in Boca Raton, is that the prevalence of the stomach pain, number one, it's super common in everybody with anorexia to have stomach discomfort when they eat. But then number two, it's also completely commonplace for that to be discounted by the people who are treating them, thinking, oh, you're either trying to trick me so you don't have to eat, or it's just all in your head. It's psychosomatic. You're not really having gut pain. That's just the way you're processing this. But how likely do you think it is, looking back now, that you just had a very inflamed, irritated gut by the food caused by the foods that you were being forced to eat.
100%. I truly believe that. Because, I mean, all the research that I've looked to, every person that I've looked at, and we can, you know, we can even cite studies that when you starve yourself, and just going back to common sense, when you are malnourished, your gastrointestinal system, your GI system, you guys, it becomes damaged. It no longer has that absorptive capacity. And so what you need to do in that situation, you know, is you need to let your GI system heal, or it can't absorb. You're going to have inflammation. You're going to have bloating. You're going to have gas and constipation. So here we are. This is when you have a dog.
That's Michelle's dog. What's his name?
Jackson.
Jackson. He's a German Shepherd.
He's a German Shepherd puppy. Yeah, when you have that inflammation and you've put sugar and you put flour on that, it's going to cause, you're going to have bloating and gas and issues. You're putting more inflammation on an inflamed system. And when the person, this poor person that says, hey, I'm inflamed, I'm hurting, and the doctor says, no, you just don't want to eat. You're making this up. I have never met a person with anorexia that doesn't genuinely want to recover. I've often had people tell me, like, I want to get better, but starving myself feels better. It hurts when I eat. Yep. I don't want to hurt.
And nobody on the treatment side of this ever considers that maybe it's what we're feeding this patient that is causing the GI pain. That never occurs to anybody at the treatment level, right? And before you answer that, Keto Mom Coaching says this message needs to be shouted from the mountaintops. I totally agree. Everybody, if you know somebody with an eating disorder, bulimia, anorexia, binge eating, please share this video. Literally, when you figured it out, Michelle, and you changed your diet, how much of your symptoms went away, especially the stomach pain that I think is all healthcare practitioners just discount that, like, that's not real.
Yeah, Dr. Brea, I had stomach problems my entire life, and I start crying on your show.
It's okay.
Probably the number one thing, though, and we can get to this too, is I had lifelong anxiety. My anxiety was so bad that often I couldn't go to work. I'd have panic attacks. I would spend hours debating, should I eat this? Can I eat this? Is it going to make me feel bad? Is it going to give me racing thoughts? And I cannot tell you, when I switched to a low-carb animal-based diet, 3 weeks, I swear to God, 3 weeks, I'll never forget coming home, you know, and my wife asked me, she said, hey, can you come here a minute? Because we had argued. She thought this way might be too restrictive. We can get into that. And she said, this is the best your anxiety has been in the 11 years that I've known you. But when I was in treatment and 12 years old, there were times I actually woke up in the middle of the night, literally soaked in tube feeding. Like, it, because my stomach couldn't tolerate, I would literally, like, it was literally coming out of the nasogastric tube. Like, I know that's kind of gross. But then I was ultimately told, like, hey, you know, you're going to have to drink more. We're going to have to give you Ensure to make this up. So right now, the current eating disorder treatment is we are just giving you calories. We are giving you sugar. You know, we're just trying to get you to gain weight. And my theory and my hypothesis is this will never work. This is why we have a 50% relapse rate. I was shocked, Dr. Brea, that 26%, this is our latest statistic, 26% of people with an eating disorder will attempt suicide. It's too much.
It's not surprising though, Michelle, when you hear what you go through, and not only the pain, both mental and physical, that you go through, but I think probably more importantly, and you could speak to this better than I, is the discounting of your pain, the ignoring of your pain, like, oh, you're just a silly little girl. And eating disorders, it's about 2-to-1 females to male. So there are men with this as well, 100%. But on average, it's a young girl who has these eating disorders. And I just think that it's got to be beyond frustrating and defeating to know, look, I'm not stupid. Michelle's not stupid. You can hear her speak. She's a smart human. And for her treatment providers to just completely ignore her pain, and she's telling them useful, actionable information, and they're just ignoring it and saying, well, I'm just going to put some Ensure in there.
Yeah. Or they're saying, okay, well, you're in pain. We'll just give you another medication. We can give you a pain for your stomach medication. And when that medication causes you to be constipated, we'll give you a medication for that. And if now you have diarrhea, we'll give you a medication for that.
Yep.
Versus nobody stops and reverse engineers and says, okay, you're having pain. Why are you having pain? You know, because it's like, we're literally taught we can't trust our bodies. And we are taught, here's the only way to heal. And this is another thing that's caused, that I think has caused people not to heal.
But think about that, Michelle. You're taught that you can't trust your body.
You can't trust your body.
The next step is you can't trust your mind.
Yeah, you can't trust your body.
The final step is you can't trust the world and your surroundings. What's the fourth step? Suicide. Or thoughts of it. You know, like, I can't trust myself, my pain sensations. I can't trust my perception of reality. What am I doing here? And Candace brings up a very, very common for eating disorders to go hand in hand with mental health disorders.
Exactly.
And I do not believe that is because eating disorders are a mental health disorder. I don't think that's the case at all. I think the things that is causing the eating disorder is also causing the mental health disorder. And I think it's the food. What do you think about that?
I think it is. I mean, we know eating disorders are multifactorial, and I would never sit here and say, like, you know, once you change, like, everything is great. But what changing the food does is it allows you to pave the way for healing. Because often people with eating disorders, there's some type of stress or trauma. You know, a lot of people, I worked in two different psychiatric care facilities as the lead dietitian. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of abuse. There's a lot of, you know, sexual abuse, physical abuse, other things. And we have a lot of trauma. And a lot of times it can come out in different ways. And so, you know, for somebody that has an eating disorder, they are now starving themselves, or they're binging and purging, or they're just binging. Well, what that does, what I feel like we fail to do, Dr. Berry, in medical care is say, okay, what does that do to our system? That changes our metabolism. So in order to heal from that, we have to heal our body and heal our metabolism. And you cannot do that with a standard American diet. It's literally putting fire on an inflamed body. So it's like we put this person who's starved and we give them, you know, up to 39 teaspoons of sugar a day. And then we don't understand why you're so anxious, you know? I really believe you have to do, if you want to heal from an eating disorder, and I have a whole chapter on this in my book, like, I believe you need to do three things. Because you can gain weight anyway. I gained weight with a standard American diet. But if you really want to be calm, if you want to have stable blood sugar, if you want to actually heal your GI system, I feel like you have to do a few things. One, you have to remove the inflammation. I think for a set period of time, you've got to get that sugar and flour out of there. Because you've got to let your GI system calm down and heal. What about
vegetable seed oils? Do you think they are inflammatory as well?
Yeah, you know what? I think they do two things. Not only are they very inflammatory to your GI system, we actually now have some good data that your brain needs fat to heal. And specifically, you know, the fats, like the saturated fats and DHA, which is from animal sources. If you take a lot of vegetable oils, that can actually prevent your brain from utilizing DHA. DHA is important in memory, cognition, learning. So especially if you're trying to relearn behaviors. So yeah, you know, interestingly, that's, you know, seed oils and sugar, actually seed oils, sugar, and ultra processed foods actually shift the neurotransmitters in your brain. You have two, everybody know, or a lot of people know about dopamine and serotonin, but you have glutamate and GABA. Very important in your brain. You eat a lot of seed oils, you know, which once again, you're trying to recover from an eating disorder. They feed you this diet with sugar, with flour, have your cookies, have your cereal, have your chips, all foods can fit. That can actually shift the neurotransmitter glutamate up to 100 times the normal level. When that happens, your brain can no longer participate in neuroplasticity. What does that mean? You can no longer cope with stress and you can no longer learn information. So,
and one of the main healing modalities is to reteach you how to eat.
Exactly.
Right?
To teach you how to deal with life.
With food, but your brain's so inflamed from the crap they're giving you that basically any ability to learn is turned off by the diet.
And then you're told, oh, well, this person just doesn't want to get better. This person must be, you know, I can't tell you how many people I went through treatment.
Yeah.
I was,
then again, back to the frustration and back to the suicide thoughts. I mean, they're literally telling you, you don't want to get better. And you're thinking, asshole. Yes, I do. But what you're doing is not helping me. It makes me want to cry. I mean, what in the world are we doing to these poor patients?
Yeah. And Jessica asked a great question. Like, how do you fully heal the body? You know, I think I would encourage anybody who is struggling with an eating disorder, get with somebody who gets a low carbohydrate diet, get with a dietitian, get with a low carbohydrate nutritionist or health coach, and have them walk you through, because it's also very, very important that, you know, especially if you're underweight, even if you're weight restored, this is not a low calorie diet. Often it's a very high calorie diet, you know, at Low Carb USA, two women that gave their testimonies, one, you know, was doing about 5,000 calories a day, the other about 8,000 calories, but they were not having the sugars, the flours, the seed oils. They were having butter and eggs and beef and saturated fat, because the brain desperately needs two things, you guys. The brain desperately needs saturated fat. It desperately needs high quality amino acids from meat. And it also needs all the things that come with that. It needs the B vitamins and the iron. And you know what it doesn't need? It doesn't need all the, when you have a lot of flours and grains, those actually bind to the minerals and things, and they can actually irritate your GI system. So we have a food system, our standard nutrition guidelines, that are so carb heavy, fiber heavy, lower in fat, high in, and, you know, and high in the seed oils. Not only do they cause inflammation and irritate the gut, they prevent the brain from healing. You go through, you know, 60 days or whatever of treatment, even some people, you know, much longer, and you come out and you might have gained weight, but you're no better. you still have these thoughts, you know, like a relapse rate is 50%, 20% of people with eating disorders will spend their whole lives in and out of treatment, you know?
Right. So I was looking into the literature, and still to this day, there is no accepted standard of care for anorexia. There's multiple different treatment modalities that different providers use: psychotherapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, family therapy, all these different kinds of therapies. But literally, guys, listen carefully. There is no accepted standard of care that this way of treating anorexia is any damn better than a coin flip or this way of treating anorexia. So my next question to Michelle Hearn, registered dietitian, wrote The Dietitian's Dilemma. There's a link to her book in the show notes below. There is an Audible version for people with ADHD. I did listen to it while I was out in the woods working twice. Actually, it's an excellent, excellent book. I highly recommend it. So since none of the treatment modalities have any preponderance of evidence that one is any better than the other, what if a doctor or a dietitian just said to somebody who's anorexic, for the next 90 days, I want you to eat, meat and eggs. And if you're hungry, you eat. If you're not hungry, don't eat. It's fine. And we're just going to start from there. And still definitely, you know, if there's mental health issues, the cognitive behavioral therapy, dealing with the stress, the drama, the trauma that may have happened to them earlier in life, dealing with the psychosocial model, right? But focusing the majority of your attention and the majority of the care on the diet. What do you think about a treatment regimen like that for anorexia and others?
Well, I think you've nailed it. I think the only point I would say is, at least in my head, I was thinking like people with anorexia, we would definitely need like some direction. Cause if you just said, cause we've just starved ourselves for so long, it would be like, okay, fine, I'm just not going to eat. But yeah. I think you've made a really good point that as soon as you get into treatment, at least in my experience, and you know, once again, it was, you know, I was 12, so it was many years ago. But I believe the second day I was there, I was immediately put into like these therapy and these art programs where you're trying to heal the brain when it's not healed. You're trying to like do things with the brain. We need to heal the body first. If I had a treatment program, I would tell you for the first week, we would do nothing. You would just eat eggs and watch movies, you know, or beef, and you would eat meat. You would give your body a chance to heal. You almost think about it like you've been in a traumatic accident. People in the ICU, we don't like have therapists come in and talk to them. We let them rest.
They've been in a rollover car accident, but we have physical therapy in there the next day, moving their broken joints.
You would never do that.
Yeah. No, yeah, that would be dumb. But that's effectively what we're doing.
That's what we're doing. And that's why, you know, and we're immediately, so people, and think about it, haven't eaten in a very long time. You know, it'd be literally like you've got multiple fire, your body's on fire. And we say, okay, we're not just going to dump like a little bit of gasoline. We're going to give you the tube feeding sugar. We're going to give you the flour. We're going to, and you know, and then we're just like, gosh, I don't understand why this person's so anxious. Why can't they calm down? Why do we have to, you know, a lot of times too, the people with eating disorders are in treatment centers are heavily drugged. I mean, like I said, I was on 7 medications, right. 2 were down.
Well, I think many care providers, they may not say it out loud, but I think they secretly believe that that eating disorders are mental health disorders, that there's something wrong with this person's brain. They need to be on psychotropics. They need to be on anxiolytics. They need to be on antidepressants. There's something wrong with their brain. And the irony is they're right, but it's not what they think that's wrong with their brain. It's the literal crap food they're putting in their body. That's step one, inflaming the gut. And then step two, the body, and step three, eventually the brain becomes inflamed. All the neurotransmitters get mucked up by the junk in the food. And then you're left I can't imagine what it would be like to be an inpatient and to be treated. And did anything get better for you in the inpatient treatment? Like after a week or 2 weeks or a month, were you like, oh, my stomach feels so much better. I feel so much better.
No, unfortunately, you just, at least in my experience, you just kind of learn how to, the less I complain, the less I was yelled at, the less privileges, you know. I'm 12, remember? So it's funny, now that I'm adult, like I felt at the time, like, I feel like I had to grow up rather quickly, you know, I just learned that if I complained or if I didn't do what they said, they would take away privileges. It's like, okay, well, you don't get to go outside today. You know, that's like, that was, you know, or you aren't going to get to go watch a movie. You're going to be in your room for the rest of the day. Like, so, I mean, it was pretty bad. It was pretty rough. And, you know, once again, we didn't have the internet, you know, we didn't have cell phones. So it was like, oh, okay, well, you know, I remember one time I had a couple of days where I was having like severe diarrhea, and they're like, well, you know, they thought I was messing with my tube. I was like, no, I just feel awful. And it was like, well, you're not going to get to call your CS, my dog coming up, Princess Jackson. Hi, Jackson. You want to say hi?
So their knee-jerk response was effectively punishment.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like, we're the only way we're going to be able to, you know, to get you to do whatever. And you were constantly told, I remember it was like, if you don't follow the rules, you will send you to like a psych ward. They'll like strap you down and have to feed you.
Yeah. Like, so if you don't behave yourself, then we'll admit what we secretly think about you, that you're crazy, and we'll send you a psych ward. Yep. Did you see that recurring theme that like it was kind of assumed that you just weren't stable mentally, that you weren't right in the head? It just feels like every time I'm around anybody who takes, it's like, that's the unspoken assumption.
Yep. Yeah. And just super recently, I was invited to sit in on two eating disorder dietitians that were giving a presentation to Harvard medical students. I was invited to sit in, and they were just talking about eating disorder treatment and the next steps and, you know, all the same stuff. And I typed in a question. I was like, well, what do you do next? You know, weight restored. And the person basically, she straight up said like, well, you know, people with eating disorders never get better. Like, I was like, are you really? So that is the view. You will always be sick. You're always going to kind of be crazy. You're manipulative. You're just, you don't want to get better. You're destroying the family. You know, you can list off a million things that, you know, were hurt. And in reality, our brains just aren't working because we're not getting the nutrition that we need. This is my belief and my theory. Once again, because my life changed so much when I got the nutrition that I needed, you know, and I've talked to several other people that life, you know, decades long of eating disorder. We now have that case study. We have a published case study of 3 people with lifelong binge eating disorder, put on a ketogenic diet and follow closely. Remission after decades of binging.
Send me a link to that as soon as we're done, and I'll add that to the show notes. I think that's an amazing statement that you just said. So given that there is no standard of care for anorexia therapy, and given that you've got 3 case studies where people with long-term eating disorders basically were in remission after a short-term keto diet.
Yeah. And they statistically, like what the researchers were hoping to do, and this was Dr. Tro, Dr. Shabani, they were hoping like, can we see remission? Like, or can we at least see improvement in symptoms? And what they also found, not only did they find remission, is at the end of a year, statistically significant improvement in mood. Guess what? People with eating disorders have higher rates of major depression. Well, no shit, right? Like, if I'm constantly worried about what I'm eating and I have racing thoughts around food and I have panic attacks and my stomach hurts, I'm kind of depressed. I don't feel very good. Yep. So you take
plus, that. Plus, nobody away. Believes you. Even your family is constantly checking to make sure you're not hiding food.
Yeah, the food police.
Not, right? Like literally nobody trusts you in the world and nobody believes you. And then we wonder why the rates of depression are so high in people with eating disorders. Duh.
And it's like, if you had told me, like back when in my 20s, it said, Michelle, I will give you the mental stability like that I have now, the calm, but I've got to chop off your left arm. I would have said, let's schedule the surgery. Like that's how much my anxiety ruled my life. I literally felt like at times I was sitting on the sidelines of my own life. I couldn't go to functions. I had to miss school. I had to miss work. I had to do side hustles sometimes just because I couldn't afford, you know, the bills. But it's literally just because I truly believe I believed I had to have carbohydrates and I had to have the standard American diet. And you're told this is another thing in every eating disorder. You will know you are well when you can eat all foods in moderation. So guess what? If you have a binge eating disorder and every time you eat a cookie, you can't stop. Well, until you can eat a cookie, you're not well. And people have suffered for decades with that nonsense.
Until you can eat a big plate of pasta and put some canola oil on it and then have a cookie for dessert and then have no belly pain and have no, then you're healed. Like, do you guys who are watching this, do you see what a false victory that is? Do you see what a false goal that is? Like, literally, it is unattainable because the very food that they're saying you'll be able to eat when you're healed is what's making you sick. It's like the ultimate therapeutic circle jerk, and the patient is the victim, and there's literally no way out. And again, I'm back to the, well, gosh, I wonder why they contemplate suicide more often than the average population.
Nobody believes you. I mean, it destroys. I can't tell you what it's like to if you've been lucky enough watching this to never have severe anxiety or racing thoughts. It's hard. It's hard to function, you know, and you're like, once again, you're just said, well, it's your fault. It's your problem. You should think your way out of it. You should go to therapy. But it's just like anything else. If you can't absorb information, if your brain isn't at a place where it can do that, if your GI system is damaged, you know, it only makes sense. Like if you had a house and it like was burned to the ground, you wouldn't just be like, well, I don't know why I can't live in this house. You'd have to rebuild it.
Right.
We also know people with eating disorders, specifically anorexia, the gray and white matter of your brain atrophies. Okay. So you go into treatment, it can get back to normal, but what have you just fed it in treatment? All these seed oils. So now you have rebuilt your brain. It's like you rebuilt your house on straw. You rebuilt your brain on all these oils. So God, why is it not functioning like it's supposed to? So I propose, like you do, Dr. Berry, the radical solution of at least, I would say 30 days minimum, people with eating disorders, we've got to stabilize your blood sugar. We've got to heal your gut and we've got to heal your brain. We've got to get your brain enough fat. And the only way to do that is we can't feed you flour and sugar. We just can't do it.
Right. And seed oils. Yeah, the seed oils. The grains. And Michelle is a dietitian. You know as well as I do. Everybody knows wheat. There's gluten and there's gliadin. But what many, many people do not know is that there is an inflammatory protein like gliadin or gluten in every single grain and grass seed out there, from corn to rice to oats to quinoa to millet to amaranth, right? All of them have these inflammatory phytochemicals that, because they're trying to get animals to not eat their babies, which are their seeds. And so people realize, they're like, oh, I went gluten free, but I didn't really get better. Well, I had many patients that the Zen in corn, if they ate corn, they literally swelled up like they were pregnant. They had joint pain, skin irritation for days. Every time they would eat corn, they'd be like, but I'm gluten free. I don't understand. And it's like all the grains, all of them have inflammatory phytochemicals in them that are going to cause some degree of inflammation, more in some people than in other people. But being gluten free, that is a great first step. But it's all the grains, it's all the vegetable seed oils, and it's all the sugar, even naturally occurring sugar. Did you have great success? Did you ever try to drink a fruit smoothie back when you were in the midst of this hell tornado that was your life? Did that seem to help?
No, not at all. It was interesting because, I mean, as a dietitian, you're told that Grains are good for you. All vegetables are good for you all the time. Fruit is excellent for you. And so, you know, of course, in treatment, you're fed a lot of fruit and a lot of grains and a lot of vegetables. And you made such a good point. I think if we just take a step back to evolution, one, we know we eat mostly meat and fat. Two, just like you said, being lunch is on like nobody's menu, right? So if animals, like if you and I went out to hunt, animals will run away. Plants cannot do that. Plants are literally rooted into the ground. So they've developed lots of inflammatory mechanisms. So if a bird tries to come eat it, it might not. Same thing with you and I. We're eating a lot of these seeds and these grains. They are causing inflammation in our gut. And every single grain, you know, has phytic acid as well. Like, you know, oats, seeds. And what does phytic acid do? Phytic acid binds to calcium and iron. You know, you are so deficient when you've gone through starvation or binging and purging. I can't tell you how many patients I had when I worked in the hospital. And this isn't just people that are underweight. Statistically, I think it's only 9% of people diagnosed with an eating disorder are underweight. Most people are normal weight or overweight, but they're overweight and they're malnourished. We continue to eat these grains that provide minimal nutrition and actually potentially bind to some of the vitamins and minerals we need to take in.
I love it. So if since there is no standard of care for anorexia, let's you and I put together our own treatment. And I'm going to let you lead. And so for any of you guys watching this or listening to this, I guarantee you know at least one person with an eating disorder. You may not know that you know them, but you do. I promise you. It is very, very common in modern society. Michelle's been looking into the prevalence and the rate of increase mm-hmm. of the eating disorders. And so have I. And I've found that in countries that still eat kind of an ancestral diet, still eat their ethnic diet, that the rates of anorexia, bulimia, binge eating are minuscule. They are at the rate that you would expect that should be everywhere in humans, which is 1 in 1 million to 1 in 10 million. Like it literally, there could be 2 specialists in eating disorders in the whole United States to take care of every single patient that would have an eating disorder if it weren't for our disordered food. That's where the disorder is the food. And so a lot of experts say, well, it's just not diagnosed as much in these countries. They don't have the healthcare system. And I'm sure a little of that is true. But what did you find when you were looking back? Like when did eating disorders really start to do the upward curve?
Yeah. So, you know, we've actually, for anorexia, they started tracking back in the 1930s. And then bulimia wasn't even diagnosed by the DSM-5. That's how they diagnosed disease until 1979. But it's really interesting. If you look from like the 1979 to 1990, they had 2 studies, the rate of bulimia was like, I want to say between about 10 and 14 per 100,000. So, you know, not too much. Today, after, you know, several 30 years of our nutrition plus guidelines, it went from 10 to 14 to 1,000. Per 100,000. That's an 86-fold increase. Anorexia over that same course of time. Anorexia, you can even look at, you know, they said they started tracking back in the 30s. The 70s to the 80s, it was about 6 to 8 per 100,000. And now we're at 280. So that's about a 34-fold increase. So we're seeing astronomical increases. And that is not just diagnosis. There's no way that we're just... You know, and, you know, people say, oh, society sucks and there's so many other things. And yes, I would never sit here and say that there aren't other factors potentially contributing to a lot of very chronic diseases. But when we take a step back and like Dr. Berry said, we can see that people who are following ancestral diets, people in close-knit societies, it's almost non-existent. And then you take, you know, even people growing up in, you know, close families, but you're eating the standard American diet are ending up with serious eating disorders. What is going on? What is happening in our brain and in our body that is causing us to restrict or to binge or to purge? You know, I'm going to argue it all comes back to a very damaged, inflamed body and brain, which is being caused by the standard American diet. But the good news is, I believe you can fix it until somebody proves me wrong. You know, I've seen it, you guys. I'm seeing it over and over with people. And once again, this is not a, you know, animal-based restrictive diet. People, you can't, if you're eating, you know, 200 calories of standard American diet, you can't eat 200 calories of eggs. this is, you know, getting adequate nutrition. This is a high fat, high calorie animal-based diet. If you're underweight, this is, you know, probably if you're not, or you're trying to lose weight, you're still getting enough calories and enough fat. But, you know, here's the thing is the dietitians and health coaches and all these people on Instagram with 9 million followers are going to say, that's restrictive. Ah, don't give up sugar. Ah, you know what? Like I said, you could have cut off my right arm. I would have given most people the eating disorder will give anything. And if you're telling me it's restrictive to give up food, that it, these food substances that are damaging my body and brain, that's total nonsense.
Yeah. Well, tell me this, Michelle. And everybody listening, how restricted did you feel when you were 12 years old in an inpatient eating disorder program that if you didn't eat all your pseudo food that they put on your plate, you would be punished by not getting to go outside? Did you feel restricted at all then?
Yeah, you know, before my parents left, so I was there for 2 months by myself. They told me to wait. And, you know, they wanted to talk to the doctor. And of course, I'm 12, so I didn't pay attention. As soon as they went off, I listened. And the doctor told my parents I wasn't supposed to hear, but I had about a 10% chance to survive. And at that point, I remember feeling grateful because I didn't want to live anymore. I was in so much pain. Your body is catabolizing. It's literally eating itself. And when I tried to eat, my stomach hurt. I had diarrhea. I had all these thoughts, you know. And at that point, I remember going to bed every night in the treatment center, just praying like, God, if there's a God, I'm not going to wake up. And I would wake up and I'd be like, oh, I'd be so angry. And now, like, you know, I'm 38 and I can't tell you how grateful I am. You know, I've been able to, I'm an athlete. I have a job. I have a house. I've got three older sisters. I've got to see my nieces and nephews be born. And so if you want to tell me this is restrictive, I mean, I've got two words for you, but I won't say it on your show. But let me tell you, this is the most free and liberated I've ever been in my entire life.
Yeah. So please stop listening to the gurus on Facebook and Instagram. Okay, let's get down to brass tacks, Michelle. We're talking to every mom and dad, grandmother, grandfather, brother, sister. You've got a family member, somebody you love who has an eating disorder. Okay. If you haven't shared this video with them, please share it with them. But because Michelle's about to drop it, she's about to give them the step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is what you need to do. You need to probably ignore everything that you were taught in the inpatient treatment. You need to ignore everything the dietitian told you. If you would like to be free of your symptoms, or at least have your symptoms go away by 95, 97, 99%, what do they need to do? Michelle Hearn, registered dietitian, author of The Dietitian's Dilemma. Tell these people they're aching, they're hurting, they're contemplating suicide. What's step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Well, I think step one is immediately like find. Well, I always tell people before you do anything else, and this would be parents, you know, of some, especially if somebody's young. If you're older than 18 and you're really suffering, it's time for some radical honesty. Like, are you really happy? Are you hurting? Are you, you know, most time people will be like, oh yeah, I eat all these foods. Things are great. No, it's not. You're anxious all the time. You're tired. You're thinking about food. As a family, your family might be a mess because you're constantly worried about this person who's starving themselves. Like, it's time to say, this is not working. Like, I think we need to make peace with this doesn't work. It's okay. It doesn't work. We're taught the wrong thing. It's time to move on. Let's not point fingers or blame. This doesn't work. So we're good there. Step two, find somebody that can help you. There are people, there are dietitians. Get on dietdoctor.com. Find somebody either virtually that believes in this way of eating, that isn't going to tell you it's restrictive, isn't going to give you nonsense. You know, I'm here to tell you too. I mean, Dr. Eric Westman was the first person who showed me research and said, low carb, high fat diets are the most studied diet of any diet out there, of vegetarian, vegan, Mediterranean. They are number one in their safety. They're safe. They're efficacious. They work and they're sustainable. So get rid of the fear mongering. You might want to be aware though, you're going to get some of it from family and friends and whatever. But so radical honesty, find somebody who works for you, you know, who's going to help you, and then just go all in. You got to go in all in for 30 days. You know, you have nothing to lose. You know, you could think about how much better your life could be. Start dreaming. If it's you, start thinking like, oh my gosh, I could get to hang out with my friends again and not be thinking about food. I could be strong enough to go for a walk and not be hurting. I could sleep through the night. Maybe one day I could have a relationship or a job, you know, but.
And maybe someday in the future, when I say, my tummy hurts, my family and my healthcare provider will actually believe I'm telling the truth and not doubt me.
And guess what? You're also, wouldn't it? In the future, you'll be able to trust your own body. That's probably the one of the best things that's not talked about enough.
Yes.
You cannot intuitively eat on the standard American diet. It sets you up for your blood sugar to go through the roof, and then you'd crash. You might be dizzy and shaky. It's not normal to feel dizzy and shaky 2 hours after eating. So, and when you're, you know, when you are changing how you eat, let's say you have a teenager or a kid who's suffering, and you're like, all right, we're going to get them. Why not try this high meat, high fat diet? Don't overcomplicate it.
Yep.
If they like 100%. Steak and if they're eat ground beef 3 times a day for 30 days, that's fine.
100%.
If they only want to eat meat, egg yolks,
I think that'd be an excellent way to heal your gut and thereby calm the inflammation. I think that's excellent. And I think one thing I would add to what you said is that I want to say very clearly that Michelle and I, we believe you.
Yes.
We believe that your stomach hurts when you eat the junk that they give you. We believe you. We believe all you should believe yourself. Stop doubting yourself. But if everybody else in your family, in your household, at the treatment center, if they're doubting you, then you got to be the first one to stand up and stop doubting your symptoms. Stop doubting how you feel. Stop doubting how your stomach reacts to the food that they give you. That is a real, truthful reaction. We believe you.
And also, a huge fear of anorexia and many in eating disorders is I don't want to be fat. I don't want to be fat. And I hear that too. Guess what? You don't. I want you to be a metabolically healthy human. You know, Dr. Barry and I both follow a very high calorie, high fat animal based diet, and eating this way will get you to the exact weight you need. Every person that I've ever met with an eating disorder, I want you to be strong. I want you to have a healthy, vibrant, amazing life. And I promise you, and I don't, and I hear that. I hear people will follow the standard American diet, they'll gain fat and they feel awful. And like, well, I don't want to do this. I don't want to live this way. We don't want you to live that way either. We want you to live vibrant, healthy, good lives. So once again, you know.
Absolutely. Michelle, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this very, very important topic. And thank you to everybody for sharing this video and share it inside of eating disorder groups, anorexia groups, bulimia groups. This literally just hearing Michelle's words, who recovered from anorexia and is now a registered dietitian, the words coming out of her mouth will be the words that saves your loved one's life, because anorexia, the suicide rate is sky high compared to the general population, but also the medical complications, the cardiac complications, the electrolyte abnormalities. Your relative in the midst of an eating disorder, their risk of dying from many things is very high. Please share Michelle's words with them. Share this video with them. Share her book, The Dietitian's Dilemma, with them. Tell people where they can find you, Michelle, if they want to continue hearing your words of wisdom. Now, I'll tell you guys, every now and then Michelle says the F word, so you better watch out.
I actually said that a low carb USA.
Only if it's meaningful and it gets the point home.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. So you can find me on Instagram. I'm at Run Eat Meat Repeat. I'm on Twitter at Michelle Hearn RD. You feel free to message me on either one of those platforms. You can message me on my website, to thedietitiansdilemma.net. In my book, we got a paperback, paperback, ebook, and the Audible is on Amazon.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much, Michelle. Somebody said your next book should be Lies My Dietitian Told Me.
Maybe that's a good one.
Thank you so much. You guys go follow Michelle. And I'm not joking, guys. If you know somebody with an eating disorder and you don't share this video with them, I don't know what to tell you, okay? Because this could be the way out of the painful maze that they're currently trapped in. So thank you so much, Michelle. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. I'll see you next time with more words of wisdom from a guest. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.